Hey everyone, welcome to The Conversation Afterwards. I'm your host, Aaron Souza, and I'm here with
Megan Owen, and I'm currently in the graduate program for clinical mental health counseling and drama therapy at Lesley University. And before that, I was a volunteer victim advocate and crisis counselor for New York Presbyterian.
And tonight, we're going to analyze, discuss, and otherwise tear apart the mouse and the cat.
Let's recap.
Yeah.
About what we're working with right now.
Because I know, as soon as it ended for me, I was just thinking about one thing. I feel so friggin' bad for that mouse. But how did we get there? Well, mouse and cat start off as good friends.
And they're such good friends that not only do they share a bowl of milk,
but they also share a pillow of silk.
Imagine being such good friends that you can share a pillow of silk together.
And then all of a sudden, swipe.
Oh yeah, after weeks of things being serene, cat suddenly,
out of nowhere,
swipes mouse.
Like an asshole.
Or, as cat says, when mouse gets really upset and is like, what the fuck, cat? What the hell's going on? Cat is like,
but I am a cat and I've told you that.
Yeah, which is bullshit.
Is it? As the story questions.
Well, we'll get into that later. So anyway, cat swipes mouse, twists the logic around, makes mouse think that mouse is wrong for trusting cat in the first place, because instinctually, cat is just gonna swipe at mouse like an asshole. And so, then cat starts inviting other mice over.
Indeed.
The sounds of strange laughter finally stirred mouse's slumber. One voice was cat's, but there were a number of voices that mouse did not recognize.
And so these other mice are coming over, and like the mouse is super happy because he's like, yeah, that was like a hiccup, okay? I don't know what I was gonna do in this relationship. I haven't seen that side of cat before, but we worked through it like champs, and now I'm so excited to see him and with all my other mouse friends. And then
walks over, sings song and a hello.
But before it could finish its cute salutation, cat swiped at mouse with no explanation.
Bow!
Gets thwacked again!
Zoom! Straight to the moon!
Bow! Zoom! Straight to the moon! Yeah!
Yeah, back when domestic violence was a
classy
joke.
We're getting off the rails a little bit. So, after this, mouse starts thinking, what am I doing wrong?
All right, and slips into a complete dark depression because cat has no problem with the other mice. All the other mice were drinking the milk, but he wouldn't let mouse drink the milk.
Yeah. So mouse is laying in the hole, won't even come out for food, and then eventually cat's like, hey, mouse.
I missed you.
I miss you. You okay, buddy?
I don't even know why you're in that hole.
Mouse, I was worried, you small, silly goose.
Mouse's voice barely came out from long lack of use. The question implied Mouse's distrust.
Of course, and look, I've got milk for us.
At this point, Mouse is weak, food deprived.
Mouse is a scavenger. Cat has been well fed this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mouse, under the hope and guise that things will go back to way they were when they first met, comes out for milk with Cat, only for the most horrific and tragic of outcomes.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I wasn't ready for that.
He is literally bitten in half, dragging his half mouse body with innards spilling everywhere towards his mouse hole.
It's so visceral.
And like, it would have been kinder if he could get in his hole, because then you wouldn't have to see the face of his once trusted loyal friend right before he is consumed.
Could have just turned over and died in peace. Very sad story.
Okay, let's do the proper rundown.
Okay.
What do you think is the most prevalent that you see?
Domestic violence.
Of course.
I think domestic violence is a very prevalent theme in this story. I think within that, we can talk about the roles and the relationships that are played in the domestic violence.
Yes, I would say the roles, and I would also say that the cycles that those roles go through.
Yeah, right. Because there's very cyclical behavior happening here.
Especially with this idea of like predator and prey in this very basic way that, in a good basic way, like a foundational way that Mouse and Cat puts out for us, we can also talk about perpetrators and victims.
Yeah, and like the power balance between the two.
Exactly.
Cool. Where do you want to dive in?
Let's start with the main theme of domestic violence. What do you think?
My perception of domestic violence, obviously there are different types. There's physical violence, the act of like hitting people, which we see in Cat and Mouse. Mm-hmm. There's also psychological domestic violence, like the milk, and holding the milk and being in control of the food source that the mouse has. Like, that's some pretty fucked up shit. You, as a student of these things, I mean, can you shine a little more light on that?
Yeah, I mean, you are already touching on some very important things, that domestic violence has different types of manifestations that someone can experience.
Mm.
And those different types can have many expressions. One important thing to distinguish, however, is domestic violence is kind of an umbrella term.
Okay.
That has to do with a family unit, and so it can include children. What we, I think, this story particularly gives us an example of is something known as IPV, which is intimate partner violence.
IPV, intimate partner violence?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is extremely prevalent. Some recent data showed that IPV is experienced by 30% of women across the globe. So that means...
Oh, wow.
Quite a few different things. Well, number one, this is only a sample of women, which is important to note because men experience IPV, and that is a misconception to think that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
We'll delve into that more, too. But this also shows that this doesn't belong to a specific culture. This is a problem that manages to arise over and over again, regardless of where people are in the world.
And that's 30% of women worldwide, regardless of their relationship status.
Correct.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people suffering. Stories like this are important.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, IPV. Intimate partner violence, and as you described, there are three different, well, you touched on two, I'll hit the third. Physical, which is the most, I think, focused on, because it is the most dangerous. Then there is psychological or emotional abuse, which typically it is often paired with physical abuse, but it can totally exist on its own. In fact, I would say there's no abuse that doesn't exist without emotional and psychological abuse. But that is characterized by criticism, intense criticism that is repetitive, shame and blame, control, threats. And then there is the third and final, which is just as dangerous as any of those, because I should say psychological abuse is dangerous because of the extreme impact it has on mental health. It deteriorates one's emotional well-being over a series of time. But the third is financial abuse, which has the most control, and we can say in this situation, the milk is what symbolized the financial abuse.
So earlier, I think that I had attributed the milk to being emotional or psychological abuse. So do you want to like take the concept of IPV and apply it to Mouse and Cat and see what kind of parallels we can draw there? I think that the violence aspect of it is pretty easy to see in the storytelling with the random acts of violence that Cat swipes at Mouse.
Yes.
And then in the end, kills Mouse.
Yes. And you can see that it's also clearly paired with psychological abuse because Cat always infers that Mouse deserves it because Cat is a cat and that is that. And you should know that.
Yeah. Would you want to elaborate on that part of the story a little bit and like...
The emotional? There's just so much going on here.
How abusers can manipulate facts like that and twist minds to like make them believe that. That's so messed up.
It is. So manipulation is also, I didn't mention it for the list of emotional and psychological abuse indicators. But that type of manipulation, as I'm sure you're aware of and many people listening are aware of, is a term called gaslighting.
Yeah.
Where it is the abuser's intention to warp the reality of the victim as a means to control. And It could be simply to control their affection, to control their perception of the abuser, to control how they interact with others and how much confidence they have when they go out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see even more of that. And here's another common thing you see with abusers. A lot of times in public, the people, men and women, who harm their partners or emotionally abuse their partners seem absolutely lovely to other people, even friends.
Ooh, creepy.
So, and this is, like I said, extremely common because it is a tactic in order to stay in control. Mm-hmm. Because they don't want people coming into the house and taking away the things that they are controlling. So to other people, in order to further discredit the victim, they act super nice guy.
They put on a mask.
Super nice girl. They do. They put on a mask. And you get to see that with the other mice that show up in this story.
Oh, yeah,
so,
right.
And they're so, Cat is so nice to the other mice. The other mice, you know, probably would turn their heads if they saw Cat take a swipe at Mouse. Because Cat has never been anything but kind to them. You know, it's so hard to believe that Cat would do that to somebody.
Oh,
especially
man.
Someone that they're so nice. You know, Mouse probably is full of shit. If Mouse ever came out here and started telling us that Cat was awful, we wouldn't believe Mouse. We would think Mouse was
That's
just
so
trying to
messed
start
up.
Some bullshit. Which, you know, it's not explicitly in the story that we listened to, but I can imagine that would play into why Mouse would go into a complete depression and isolate, because it's not safe to tell others what's going on. Because if Mouse isn't believed, then retribution from Cat is going to be bigger.
Now, my question here, like, instead of isolating and sitting in their hole all day, why wouldn't Mouse just extract themselves from this situation and leave?
Yeah, so this gets into common misconceptions about IPV. This is what a lot of people think. And it's not coming from a bad place when someone says, why doesn't she leave or why doesn't he leave? It's coming from a place, I think, of, you know, empathy, of just wanting them to get out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's not that simple. Even if there is no physical violence, it's not that simple. Because here's the thing. One of the main pieces of knowledge and statistics about domestic abuse and IPV that I learned when I was doing crisis counseling and being a victim advocate at Newark Presbyterian is that the most dangerous time for a victim of IPV is when they're trying to leave. Because that is when the abuser is going to pull everything out of their bag to make sure they stay. So essentially, already the abuser is using all these tactics because they want the person to stay. And we can further talk about in a few minutes why perpetrators are the way they are, you know, because they are not just a cat. They are not just an
abuser. Are you telling me that a cat's not just a cat?
It's not just that? It's not just that. But that aside, they are doing this because they already don't want this person to leave, and they're already using tactics that are desperate when you think about it socially. They are unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is coming from a broken place. Once the victim is already trying to leave, those desperate tactics get heightened. So if they're physically abusive, you better believe if they come back, they're going to get hurt bad enough so they won't think about doing it again. Or if it's emotional on top of that, or alone, they're going to get cut down. Their confidence is going to be stripped. The abusers may even go out of their way to sow seeds to be like, oh, they're full of shit, or they actually abuse me. That's common to have them.
They try to flip it.
They try to flip the script, which does absolute havoc to a victim's mind because they're already vulnerable. Right? They already have their reality so twisted by being put down all the time and controlled and manipulated that they can start thinking they're the abuser.
Would you say that we see maybe like a little sprinkle of that right after Cat swipes at Mouse the first time and Cat's like, you can't blame me for this because
yes.
this is my nature and you already knew this getting into it.
Right.
So if you try to tell me that I'm wrong here, well then,
and how dare you bring that? out of me. So this leads me to a quick anecdote, if I may.
Of course.
About when I worked as a crisis counselor and victim advocate. Essentially what that role was is I was a volunteer. I was trained for a few months. And then I started responding to the emergency department at New York Presbyterian on the East Side in Manhattan, Upper East Side. I'd get called in whenever there was a victim of a crime, whether it be domestic abuse, sexual assault, assault and battery, whatever it was. I would respond and I would provide counseling, provide resources, and be a liaison of advocacy wherever I was needed. In a nutshell, along with preventing re-traumatization by telling every staff member what happened, that sort of thing. And here's an example of this, of what we're talking about. On one occasion, I was called in where it was a young mother. This is where it's complicated. And her partner was abusing her. And how she described it is they were having some sort of argument. It seemed to be about him worrying about her fidelity. And she got so frustrated with him that she picked up an empty aluminum can. So not a full can of Pepsi or Coke, whatever it was. It was completely empty. And she flung it in his direction. Didn't even really hit him. And in response, he hit her with a full heavy vase in the face.
Oh, Jesus.
And she was there for stitches. Obviously. But the most troubling thing about it when I was trying to talk to her about this instance is she was like, yeah, well, it's my fault because I know when I get upset, he gets upset and then he can't control what he does to me.
Oh, man, that's so fucked up.
Yeah, and this can transcend this core concept we're about to touch on, not only in domestic violence, but just in relationships and, you know, how to socialize in general. Like, feelings are one thing. You can feel whatever you're feeling, but how you behave is your responsibility. And you never get a pass on behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to work on stuff like that. But clearly, she believed it was her fault, and it was this another layer of fear because she has a child. So she doesn't want to come up in front of anybody because she doesn't want her child being taken away. And that's another issue with domestic violence is it's more than just the family home. It is a systematic, institutionalized problem because a large percentage of victims of domestic violence also end up incarcerated. And that's because either they develop substance abuse issues, they're coerced into doing illegal activities by their abusers, or one of the saddest is they are charged with failure to protect of their own children.
Oh, man.
So it gets really...
Yeah, if it wasn't bad enough, it's just like it compounds and it gets worse and they get sucked into this cycle of just abuse
And often it's the feeling that if they can just do something better, like if next time like Mouse could be more aware that Cat was just a cat and treat Cat more like a cat, then maybe Mouse will be safe.
Cat was a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into that. Like, we've been talking about it, and even from the abuser's point, like, some of this false logic that they have is like, oh, it's my fault because Cat is a cat, right? My abuser's an abuser, and I know that already, but, like, how do we get to that point, like, where the cat is a cat? Like, how do we identify that? How do they get there? And it's got to be more than that, right?
It is. Abuse is often seen, especially IPV. There are a lot of different studies and research on the fact that it is an intergenerational problem. And this is because abuse, when being experienced by a developing body, so a child, ends up having mental repercussions, which will then further the cycle of abuse, because that person could grow into an abuser or someone who seeks out abusive relationships. And the science behind this is actually very interesting. If you're a child and you're experiencing either physical or emotional abuse on a familial level, you are so stressed, you are creating all these different chemicals that are actually making changes in your neuroendocrine system. When that happens, imagings have shown actual malfunctions in the minds of these children. And specifically, they see things like synaptic pruning, which is done in order to aid survival. So certain things don't develop. For example, this creates individuals with a higher likelihood of growing up to experience more disassociation, which is withdrawal from reality, or something like alexithymia, which impairs the ability to sense and reflect on subjective self states. So if a person, this abused person, is hyper aroused, they then experience a neuro disconnection, which disrupts all awareness of emotional turbulence, and it kind of stops the cognitive strategies that might actually help that state of hyperarousal. So essentially, you have a person who cannot detect how upset they are. And they could be acting on this level of extreme aggression and then deny it and not be able to stop it.
Oh, wow. That's dangerous.
Yes. This is how we start getting cats, so to speak. Is you have someone who doesn't have the self-awareness nor the tools to deal with anger and fear. And then we start having to deal with attachment styles as well, which affects both parties. So attachment styles are how you are brought up in your family. It tends to be mostly a familial impact, could be friends and environment that create your attachment style as a person.
Is this the nurture and the nature versus nurture?
Well, this is more internal dynamic models.
Okay.
But yes.
All right.
In short form, yes. So your internal dynamic model shapes what your behaviors are going to be socially and what you need from your relationships and how you go about getting those needs. Okay?
Okay.
And how you perceive those relationships. And in abusive relationships or in IPV, you tend to have people with insecure attachments, so they're worried someone's going to leave, and there's low self-confidence. Or you have avoidance, which is wanting the relationship, but also sabotaging the relationship and dodging the relationship and getting really close and then pulling far away. And there are so many things that play into this, because of what we have experienced as people and what our brain has learned in order to survive.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you, what attachment styles do you think we see in mouse and cat?
I would say mouse, definitely insecure.
Okay.
Because of mouse's codependence on cat.
Mm-hmm.
And mouse can't detach happiness and safety away from cat. As soon as cat starts being cruel and starts, you know, messing around with other mice, mouse can't move on.
Mm-hmm.
And already it's because of the emotional manipulation that's occurred, but also it's because of mouse's attachment style.
Right.
Mouse could have grew up with mommy and daddy mouse having some problems. And maybe Daddy Mouse wasn't around or Mama Mouse wasn't attentive.
Would you want to do some theater role play real quick to try to get to the root of Mouse's developmental issues?
Well, yeah. Would you want to sit in the director's chair and assign roles? You seem to have an idea.
I'd love to be Daddy Mouse is what I'm getting at.
You want to be Daddy Mouse, and who am I?
I guess you're Mommy Mouse.
Right. And there is no mouse in this. We're just Daddy and Mommy.
Mouse is the audience's perspective.
Okay, let's go.
Well, I'm off to the cheese factory again.
But, Barry, you're always off to the cheese factory. I felt like you just got off your shift like an hour ago. Are you working a double?
Martha, if you like eating all the cheese and the little one likes eating the cheese, you know what they say. The cheese ain't gonna make itself, so I gotta get up with the sun before the cat gets up. Sneak on out to the cheese factory, make a bunch of cheese, share it with all the other mice, and then come on back.
But Barry, I just need you to make more time for me and Baby Mouse. Because Baby Mouse is starting to hide from you a little bit, you know? Like, I don't think Baby Mouse
feels very attached to you.
Baby Mouse will be okay. Have some cheese, Baby Mouse.
But Barry.
Bam! Zoom! Right to the moon. Okay, off to work I go. Bye-bye.
Barry! And then, Barry was eaten by Cat. But nobody knew about that.
And that's that.
Scene?
All right, so now we know a little bit more about Mouse's background. We're going to cut all of that.
I think you should get rid of all that. I was really expecting to be Baby Mouse, but I also didn't want to take away your agency.
Oh, you should have taken it away. I didn't know where I was going.
No, it was important to explore that. You wanted that parent-to-parent drama therapy.
I just thought that they were the two most important things to hear from in order to figure out what was going on with Baby Mouse.
I agree. I do not think you're wrong. I enjoy our different perspectives of what we wanted to explore.
I'm surprised I didn't talk more about penises and Freudism.
And milk.
Oh, right. Let's talk about milk for a second.
Okay.
So milk is like financial dependency.
Yes. That is, to me, what that symbolizes.
Yeah.
Is if someone has all the power of the resources in the home, mm-hmm. Person with all the money.
Yeah.
Or the person with all the connections.
Or the person with all the milk.
Or the person with all the milk, right? Because
would be a zoologist in Chicago. He has a refrigerator full of 28 exotic milks. I researched this in my own time because it's something that really interests me.
It's real.
Yeah, this is absolutely... Yeah, okay. This is real. I wouldn't deliver anything that wasn't a fact.
I don't know. This could be like your version of Santa Claus. You really want this guy to exist.
He might have more or less milks now. I don't know how COVID's affected him.
He's real. Tell me about Milk Santa.
Well, he works in the Chicago Zoo. He has a refrigerator full of at least, I would say, around 26 milks of exotic animals around the world. And I want to get me a taste of those milks.
Which one would you want to taste first?
Giraffe.
Giraffe milk? Why?
Yeah, I think giraffe
milk. What's your reasoning?
I think it would taste good.
Why?
I don't know.
What? The leaves they're eating?
I like giraffes, and if I can drink a cow's milk, I think I should be able to drink a giraffe's milk.
Okay, fine.
What milk would you want to drink?
I want dolphin milk.
That would be a good milk.
Because they eat completely different stuff. Is it salty? It's probably really salty.
I don't know. I'd like our listeners at home to please write to us and tell us which milks they would like to drink if they would drink an exotic milk. Am I allowed to do that?
I don't know.
I'd like to hear more about those milks. But let's hear more about the milk in Mouse and Cat, which I'm assuming is cow's milk.
One can assume.
Or goat's milk.
One could assume. Yeah, so financial abuse, right. All the resources, which can take the form of money, but also social connections, because in these situations, it could be a goal to cut off the victim from their own resources and being able to ask people for those resources if they don't have them.
Like the other mice.
Mm. So shame and embarrass that mouse right back into his hole.
Oh, damn.
The milk is all the power, because not only does Mouse desperately want the same friendship he used to have with Cat, which was very beautiful because the cat would listen to Mouse's stories, he also needs the nourishment of milk, and he will die because Mouse has not been exercising his other skills because he's completely codependent on Cat.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to talk about this bit just a little bit. Another common trait that you see in abusive relationships is love bombing, where it starts out really, really well. And this is all part of the abusive cycle, and it can reoccur, love bombing, where it is a means to justify bad behavior. But first it's a primer, it's a groomer, where they're like, look how great I am, look how fun I am, look how much I love you, look how much I can take care of you. So you completely fall into dependency on this person.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bad behavior starts.
Right, and it usually doesn't start with a large like act of violence or something, right? It would
small.
Start with something small.
Yeah, I've heard it been described as it starts so small, and you think that it's just like the relationship, let's say it's a soup that you're making together. and you think, you know, that it's just hot water, and it's getting hotter, and it's getting hotter, and it's getting boiling, and it's like slowly occurring, and then suddenly you realize that it's not a soup, you're a frog in a pot, and have been a frog in a pot this whole time. It typically is a very slow reveal.
Yeah.
And by that point, it is very hard to get out.
Yeah, you can't really extract yourself at that point.
I mean, you can, but it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you don't feel like you can. You feel like, how would you survive without the milk? How would you survive without their apartment? How would you survive without, like, their paying rent? How would you survive without their extra job?
Well,
how would you survive without their family?
Let me ask you, if there were a listener right now who was going through something similar to this, with all of the studying you've done and your experience at the New York Presbyterian as a victim advocate, would you have any kind of advice of how you could help yourself if you were in this situation?
Yes. How about I answer this from two aspects?
Okay.
How you would help a friend, and then how you would help yourself.
Okay.
Helping someone else, one thing you have to be very mindful of is just checking your judgment at the door. Because even though your judgment may be coming from a loving place of wanting them to be okay, as we discussed previously, it's not so easy to leave. And you insinuating that they should just leave will make them feel worse, because they will just feel like they are failing at something else, because guaranteed they already don't feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
And it may make them feel helpless, because they're like, that is the one thing that I do not know how to do.
And especially if, like, you're telling your friend that it's something so easy, like, why aren't you doing something so easy?
Yeah, it's just, and they're like, I can't even do something easy. I might as well drift off into substance use. I might as well not care about myself. I might as well. So it's important when helping a friend to listen. And like I said, take your judgments, set them aside, and sit there intentionally thinking about how your friend is an expert of their own experience. So if they are telling you they are safe right now, then they are safe right now, but y'all need the safety plan. Or better yet, you get them to a professional who can help them safety plan. And the thing is, there are a lot of different organizations out there that are very discreet, because discretion, of course, is important, because if the abuser starts to feel like the victim is leaving, then things become more dangerous. Luckily, we live in a time where it's much easier to be discreet with the internet, unless, you know, they have, you know, some kind of viewing of where the people are going. So always use the private incognito searches when you are doing this. But let's actually go over some resources.
Now you have two reasons to use incognito mode.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to read a list of resources, but before we do that, really quick, just to wrap up thoughts on how to help this friend. Safety planning, right? A professional should be doing that with them, but one thing you can do is be that support for them and let them know that you're that support. Like, if they need to go somewhere, you can provide that space. If they need someone to put a suitcase at your home or in your car in case they have to leave really quick, offer to do that. And there are many people you can get in touch with in order to help this along. So let's get into resources.
So the first resource is the National Domestic Hotline, 1-800-799-SAFE.
So what they include is crisis intervention, which, you know, it's a crisis line to use on the phone, but they also have information regarding, like, signs of domestic violence and IPV, statistics. They can get into referrals, and they also have other online resources for you to access.
You could also reach out to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence.
And they literally have it all. They even have conferences on how to help others who are in IPV. They're full of information. They have hotlines that you can also call. You can text them, I'm pretty sure, along with a whole plethora of resources.
And then there's Futures Without Violence, which is an online resource.
Which is awesome for both victims and friends of victims, because it is actually a compendium of state and U.S. territory statutes and policies on domestic violence and healthcare regarding domestic violence. So, for example, in some places like New York, you will find that certain instances of IPV can still be considered a misdemeanor, which is not great when you want to be taking things to court. It doesn't mean don't try it. It just means you need to have a specific approach when you do try it. So this is extremely useful if you are at the stage when you can start prosecuting, which I hope we can be at more often in this country.
And last but not least, the Emotional Abuse Hotline.
Right.
An easy number to remember, 741-741.
And what's beautiful about that is it's a text. And once you type in 741-741, you just send the word home to them, and you will have an emotional abuse crisis counselor there to help you parse through your relationship and figure out what's going on. It's great if you think you are on the borderline of being in an abusive relationship, and also if you know you fully are, it's wonderful support.
So if you or someone you love are experiencing IPV in a relationship, the resources that we just listed are an excellent way for you to take care of yourself and get yourself out of there.
Yes. And along with those resources, there are always local options. So make sure to open that incognito tab and take a look around and see what there is for you, because there tends to be really good organizations. But just as importantly, if not more importantly, you have to find, if you can, some compassion for yourself, because you are not alone. Loads of people experience this. 30%, man. Across the globe.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
And that's underreporting, because that doesn't include men, which there are a lot of. You're not alone, and no matter what your abuser has told you and no matter what you have told yourself, you do not deserve to be abused. You deserve help and a happy relationship.
Yeah.
And that's what we wanted for Mouse at the end of Mouse and Cat.
Oh, poor Mouse.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody, to the conversation afterwards.
Yeah.
We hope you learned something, and we hope the resources are helpful. If anyone's interested, I can post some links of the articles where I drew some information today. And to close this episode, I'm going to sing you a song from one of my favorite Mouse movies, The Great Mouse Detective.
Ooh, exciting.
Sang by the one and only Ratigan. Not a rat. He's a mouse.
That's confusing.
Goodbye so soon. I actually don't know the lyrics to this part.
Why would you offer to sing us off if you didn't know the lyrics?
Never say never, say never.
I'm sorry for the disappointment. Please go on with your days now. Goodbye and see you next time on The Conversation Afterwards.
Thanks for joining us for The Conversation Afterwards. All of the links and phone numbers we talked about in tonight's episode can be found in the description. From Aaron Souza, Megan Owen, and everyone at Pipe Dream Theater, be good to each other all the days of the year. We'll see you afterwards.